We're the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Good morning. WGNS wants to keep you informed of what's happening in our community. Mitchell Moat will be joining us momentarily from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. But right now, we wanted to fill you in on what happened yesterday afternoon with the Rutherford County Ethics Committee. They convened yesterday afternoon at the Rutherford County Courthouse to address a complaint filed against the Rutherford County Property Assessor's Office. That was all yesterday afternoon. The committee heard from Rob Mitchell, the property assessor, and Richard Kincaid, the individual who had filed a complaint against the property assessor's office, as well as Rob Mitchell. And here is the way it all got started.
Senior management has been coercing residential appraisers into deferring property improvements and value changes to 2026, coinciding with the next reappraisal.
Kincaid went on to state before the committee,
"This tactic aims to avoid notices from being sent out during election years, thereby influencing public perception, reducing phone calls, and limiting the volume of appeals made to the Board of Equalization. This deception effectively conceals individual improvement values from the property owners by combining the smaller value changes into the larger market reappraisal increase reflected in the future notice received. Consequently, this altered approach also delays adding property improvements to the tax roll, essentially providing 2 years of unauthorized tax exemptions."
And during that hearing yesterday afternoon, Kincaid further claimed that Chance Baker, his manager at the assessor's office, suggested that Mitchell was aware of these alleged delays.
"On May 31st, 2024, I overheard Chance Baker, my supervisor, the residential coordinator, describing this scheme in detail to a colleague. Shockingly, Baker revealed that Rob Mitchell was aware of these actions, which had been strategically conducted throughout his 8-year tenure. Baker divulged this information at the time, believing that the comptroller's office had randomly discovered 2,000 improperly reviewed accounts, unaware that I had contacted the comptroller due to the suspicions back in March."
Mitchell defended his office and addressed some of the accusations. He emphasized the integrity of his management.
"We had a meeting with the Division of Property Assessments. There are no 2,000 errors. Please see the emails from Brett Bombick."
Mitchell also said,
"They were noted that there were hand change notices that we did to accommodate the trustee's office so we could roll up the tax roll early. Hand change notices were put on after the fact. We have until September the 1st of the prior year to put on anything that has not been put on the electronic roll. And we're in the process of doing that. We do it every year. We're still reviewing the change corrections, and we have until 2025 to do that."
The property assessor then highlighted,
"Kincaid spoke to me regarding townhouse proration. This was the first time that I was made aware of it. I asked for any evidence, but as to date, I have received none from him. The comptroller that charged the comptroller's office found 2,000 improvements. That's false. We've already addressed that. See the letters from Brett Bombick. The 2,000 is an internal quality control that we ran in-house, which was somehow copied and shared. It is not a public document."
Despite the defense, the hearing revealed widespread concerns among the public and former employees about Mitchell's leadership, citing multiple employee complaints. Former employees like Richard Wright, who worked in the assessor's office between 2011 and 2016, and John Cortez, voted about their worries during this hearing.
"During my time there, there was some activity and behavior that was questionable."
Commissioner Robert P. requested the results of the Tennessee Comptroller's Office and their fact-finding mission be submitted to that committee.
"We asked the comptrollers to send us an indication of whether they had any findings of any of these allegations. I'd like a report back from the comptroller's office to us."
Additionally, the County Ethics Committee has been asked to do some additional investigation. They've brought in also the Rutherford County District Attorney General to invest these allegations even farther.
I think that's what Mr. Mitchell actually gave to us. It seems to substantiate that at least a couple of those claims seem to be the case. But we, I assume that is a motion that we refer this complaint to the district attorney and to the comptroller of the treasury. Is that your motion, Mr. P? Do we have a second to that motion?
Second.
That was Teb Beatty, the chairman of the Ethics Committee. The complaints against Mitchell include unethical behavior, wrongful property recordings, and conflicts of interest. Special accusations involve delaying property value updates, hiring unqualified individuals with political connections, and award-winning raises based on favoritism rather than merit. A senior manager, Chance Baker, is also accused of working as a real estate agent, presenting a potential conflict of interest. And the whistleblower, a concerned employee who is fearing retaliation, originally called for a full investigation to restore the public trust and morale within the property assessor's office. Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr said in a prior broadcast,
there are about a half a dozen different allegations dealing with how the assessor's office, particularly the senior leadership, was not putting properties on the tax roll, how they were allowing specific people to have their square footage on their homes increased. And according to the complaint, the assessor's office knew this and didn't contact the property owners that their square footage had increased.
That was County Mayor Joe Carr. The county mayor also expressed the need for transparency. Again, the Ethics Committee has asked the district attorney to investigate the complaints. WGNS will keep you informed on this issue as it progresses, and we are wanting you to know that we're staying neutral. We're right in the middle, giving you both sides of that issue. That way you can determine how you feel it's going. That's a look at the meeting that was held yesterday in the historic Rutherford County Courthouse, the Ethics Committee meeting. Stay with us. Much more here on WGNS. Right now, let's check the latest traffic information.
Good morning. Still got heavy traffic trying to get up through the Antioch area on 24 westbound. Coming in from Murfreesboro and Rutherford County, headed towards Davidson County. Just about through with that wreck eastbound on Briley Parkway right there at I-24. Still pretty sluggish right now on 65 southbound here at Trinity Lane. Princess Hot Chicken has new items on the menu. You can check them out today. Order online. It's easy. PrincessHotChicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Schedule online, anytime. Getting an appointment with Ascension Care Teams at St. Thomas just got easier with online scheduling. Now you don't have to break away from your day to book the care you need when and where you need it. No matter where you are or what you're up to, whether you're a new patient or if you've been here before, just pick the appointment that works for you. Schedule online, anytime at getsthealthcare.com.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric, who offers energy-saving tips during the hot summer months. Change your HVAC filter once a month for more efficient operation. For more tips, go to mte.com/myenergyplan.
Hi, this is Jenny Harrison with Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. I want to welcome you into our shop for a variety of different things to see. And if this bright sunshine isn't cheering you up enough, we have some lovely bright interior arrangements to help give you an extra boost to your day. This is Jenny at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. If you'd like to lift somebody up, come on over to Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. We're located at 117 South Academy Street, just across the road from East Main Church of Christ. Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts.
Listen each weekday morning at 9 o'clock for the Roundtable here on News Radio WGNS. Interesting hosts and guests with the news, views, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
Welcome back to the Action Line from WGNS. If you're wondering about the weather, well, it's not as hot as it has been. 75 right now. The high today is going to be 86 degrees. But again, 75 right now. If we're going to get some rain today, it should be later this afternoon. About a 50% chance of rain late this afternoon. I'll believe that when I see it. Mitchell Motes with us. And we just haven't had that rain that we needed.
No, Bart, we have not. I mean, there were folks got some. It has been very spotty. And the folks that have gotten rain have not gotten, you know, what they need, not enough. But, yeah, we're sure in a dry spell right now.
Mitchell is with the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Have you noticed the drought? What's it doing to gardens? I guess if you water it, you're okay.
Well, it's rough. It's hard on them, very hard on them. You know, not just gardens. If you drive around the county and you pass some of the crop fields, you'll see some corn that is really suffering. It's going to impact yield. You know, the heat and the dry in combination started, especially on corn, when a lot of it was at a really critical time when you know, when pollination is taking place between, you know, when the tassels are out and the corn's starting to silk. And so if you don't have adequate moisture and if you've got a lot of excessive heat during those times, I mean, corn's, you know, it's wind pollinated. And because of the heat, because of the dry, you don't get as complete pollination, and so you'll have ears that will not develop fully out to the end of the cob. And, you know, it's not uncommon to go into some of those fields and peel the shuck back and, you know, maybe, you know, a third, the final third end out there on the tip end or the silk end, it won't have any grains on it, none formed there. So, yeah, it's having a big impact on it. As well as vegetable gardens, if they're not getting irrigation, then, you know, a lot of them have given up that have not received irrigation. But you think about it, just how much a drastic change we've had in rainfall. I mean, think back to May. You know, I think at my house in May, in my rain gauge, I captured somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 inches of rain in the month of May. But then in June, okay, then, you know, just a little over two inches, not hardly 2.5 inches. And then thus far in July, you know, haven't captured anywhere close to a half inch of rain yet. So, you know, we've had an extended dry period. You couple that with the heat, but not only heat, you know, how many days have we had a breeze, you know, a fairly strong wind? That just really exacerbates that whole thing. It causes, you know, plant tissue to dry out much faster. So it's been a stressful time. It is a stressful time on plants in general, on people too.
Here's a note from a listener who says, I'm so thankful I listened to your advice earlier this year. We did put out a boxed garden in a small boxed area right on my patio. It's a whole lot easier to take care of. We've been enjoying all of the vegetables, and looks like we're starting to get some tomatoes in now.
Good. Excellent. Good.
So I guess on the small ones, you can water that easier.
Oh, you can, and you can water a big one, you know, if you plan ahead and set up for that. But you've got to think about that because it's very rare that we will not have a summer when there's not a dry period. You know, I heard a farmer one time say that you got to remember always 3 weeks away from a drought, and there's a lot of truth to that, because, you know, in July, if you go 3 weeks without rain or significant rainfall, then you're getting very dry, and so stuff's going to suffer. So knowing that is apt to happen, it seems to happen more times than not that we have those extended dry periods in the summer here. If you plan ahead for that to have some system of watering plants. And of course, you know, the most efficient, the easiest thing is you put a sprinkler out there and turn it on, and it sweeps back and forth or circles around and around with these little impulse sprinklers. That's probably the most inefficient way to do it.
Inefficient
because of water loss.
Okay.
You're throwing those droplets up in the air, and so you're going to have some loss. A lot of that liquid is landing on the plant surfaces, on the tissue, on the leaves and the foliage and so on. Well, they don't take in a lot of water through foliage. You know, most water is absorbed through the roots. So we don't really water plants. We water the ground, and then the plants suck the water out of the ground. So that's way better than none at all. I mean, that's how rain comes. Okay, so you know, rain is good, but we're not. That's not the most efficient way to do it, because you lose a lot of that water just due to evaporation and so on, especially during high heat periods. The most efficient way is to water the ground right there around the plant. So you use drip irrigation or soaker type hoses that put the water at the base of the plant. So again, planning ahead for that, you can install soaker hoses, run them, or install drip tape, drip line. It'll low pressure, it operates off of just normal household water pressure.
Do you use less water?
You would.
Because water's expensive. Yeah,
it's just running through a meter. It is, and even if you have a well, you know, it takes electricity to pump the water, or it takes some kind of energy. So you're paying something to get that water up out of the ground. If you have a well, and get it spread out over whatever you're watering, whether it's a garden, whether it's a lawn, a landscape, whatever the case may be. And even if you have a well, I just talked to some folks earlier this week. They're irrigating with a well, but they share a well with a neighbor or two, and you know, does the well have capacity to keep up with all the water demands? And sometimes no. I mean, it'll run low, and you can't put enough water out. So you know, you ask a question, is it hard on stuff? Yeah, it is. Very hard on it. You know, you see a lot of trees dropping leaves. That's just a way for them to try to survive, because you know, leaves obviously are the photosynthetic tissue. That's how there's sunlight receptors, and that's how plants generate their energy through photosynthesis. But also, that's how they lose a large quantity of the water that they lose is through those leaves, through the openings in the leaves, where carbon dioxide enters in order for photosynthesis to happen. But that's not a one-way door. That those cells, those openings in the plant tissue or in the leaf tissue, As carbon dioxide is in, water vapor can escape. And so the more photosynthetically active they are, then the more water they lose. So when it, on a bright sunny day, photosynthetically active, but they're losing a lot of water. So the plant says, shoot, we got to stop this. So they start closing up stomata, those openings in the leaves. And when it gets dry enough and they're not producing energy as much as they would, then they start to abort some of those leaves, to shed those leaves, so that they're doing away with some of that water loss tissue just in an effort to survive. So that's why you're seeing lots of leaves, like on tulip poplars, on sycamore trees, that are going off color and dropping to the ground, especially the older ones. A lot of litter out there right now. And folks say, well, is my tree sick? Well, probably not, but it's just thirsty.
Now here's a text from a listener who's having a similar problem to what you're describing there. She says, my crepe myrtle trees are dying with very little flowers on them. I've noticed that a lot of the other neighbors have the same issues. Could it be from the cicadas? Would it hurt my tree if I cut out the dead parts and just sort of threw them away?
Well, it's never going to hurt anything when you cut out dead tissue.
Okay.
Dead tissue serves no purpose.
It's good. Is it good?
Oh yeah, it's fine. Because okay. I mean, if it's dead, then if it's left there, eventually it's going to decay, and so you don't want that decay to spread from the non-living tissue and living tissue. So removing dead tissue is always a positive thing. It's probably not from the cicadas. There are a lot of small branches that are dropping out of trees, and when I say small, I'm talking about smaller than pencil diameter. Typically,
little,
in
really
most cases,
small.
Diameter, pencil diameter, or smaller, and we're talking ends of branches, the tip ends of branches out there, maybe 6, 8, 10, 12 inches long. The reason they're dying is that female cicada has an appendage. It's called an ovipositor, and so it's just an appendage that she uses to saw into that stem, that woody stem, on those branches, and deposit eggs in that slit. And so she'll do that. She'll deposit some eggs. She'll move down the branch, do it again, deposit some more eggs. So if the branch is small enough, then it's not uncommon from the point of the last oviposition site, the last site where she laid the eggs, towards the tip end, for that branch to die. And then, of course, it dies, and the wind blows, and it hangs off, so it turns brown. It's flagged out there, so it's like little brown flags. Wind blows, they fall to the ground. A lot of littering out there. That's very common. Now, typically, that does not cause any major damage to the tree. Now, if it were a little bitty, brand new plant, yeah, it could cause some damage there. And that's what we always caution folks about during those cicada years, is maybe avoid putting out brand new plants, woody plants, until after the cicadas have passed. But the crepe myrtle, I mean, they certainly have laid eggs. They laid eggs in lots of different species. So you could see some dead branch ends from that. But boy, there was a lot of, this spring, a lot of crepe myrtle stems did not green up. They did not put out new growth. And I think it's, you know, contributed a lot of that to the two seasons of really cold weather. We had the December, you know, flash freeze, and then in January we had that extended cold spell with the freeze on, you know, the cold weather and the snow and so on. Had some dieback from that, and a lot of those did not green up this year, did not put out new foliage. So yes, it's certainly fine to remove any dead tissue like that.
Now, by the way, if you have a question for Mitchell this morning, you can talk, you can call in and talk just like the old days, or you can text it.
I kind of miss the old days, yeah.
Yeah, everybody loves to text all of a sudden.
Yeah.
615-893-1450. That's the same number for talking or texting, 615-893-1450. Another one dealing with cicadas here. This person says, each afternoon I come out of the garage going into the house, and I hear what sounds like cicadas, a lot fewer than when they were at their peak, but it still has that sound to it.
Yes.
Could it still be cicadas, or is that something else?
No, it could be because what we had that came out in mass numbers at the end of April and through most of May was a periodical cicada, a 13-year periodical cicada, meaning that they emerge every 13 years. They emerge in mass, you know, they reproduce, you know, they're out there in mass basically all at one time, and you know, they live their life as an adult, and they die, and after they've mated and laid eggs, and the cycle just continues. They'll come back another 13 years. But every year we have annual cicadas, and you'll find them, dry flies, folks may refer to them as a dry fly. They look very much like the periodical cicadas. They're a bit larger. They're darker colored, and those periodical cicadas that we had earlier in the year, you know, they had kind of bright red eyes, kind of bulging eyes, bright red. These annual cicadas do not. They have a darker colored eye, and again, they're a bit larger, and they do make a similar sound. So that very well could be what you're hearing. And seems like you go out in the evening, afternoon, early evening, and you can hear them. Whereas with the periodical cicadas, we didn't hear them so much during the evening. We heard them more, you know, during the daytime. So very likely you are hearing cicadas.
Our phone number again, 615-893-1450. Mitchell Motes, our guest, will be back after we check on the traffic and weather and continue the conversation. Our number again, 615-893-1450. Don't you dare go away, but if you have a question, send it to us, 615-893-1450.
Good Neighbor Talk covers issues you won't hear anywhere else. They're local issues. WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Hi, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurants. One of the places I love to eat out the most and still be able to do so and maintain a healthy weight is at Demas's. You can get those options on the menu online at www.demasrestaurants.com. You can make the decisions that you want to make before you come in. We have options ranging from grilled chicken to fish. You can get it with a side of green beans or spinach or even zucchini. Please have your family join our family for lunch or dinner at Demas's.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Our prices will normally meet internet prices. We also have PA and DJ equipment. Some lights, yes, we have that covered too. You can come rent a PA and sound system, do your karaoke, and bring it back. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course.
Good morning. There's some radar over in the Two Rivers area up and down Briley Parkway near McGavick Pike, so be careful. It's still a little bit heavy here on 65 southbound in Trinity Lane as you work your way down from the north there. Coming out of Madison, still has some volume. Not bad, actually, leaving Mount Juliet on I-40 going westbound, headed into Hermitage. Just that normal build up there around Central Pike. Prince's Hot Chicken has new items on the menu. Check them all out today. Order online. It's really easy. Prince'sHotChicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Few spotty showers and storms early this afternoon. Otherwise, skies will become mostly sunny, high in the upper 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low near 65. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 74.
Hi, this is Gator with Tire World Off-Road. We're your local Rough Country dealer. So when you're ready to add some character to your rig, ask for Gator at Tire World Off-Road on Memorial Boulevard.
This is Sean Brown at Tire World on Broad Street. Online at tireworld.us.
All That's News, your afternoon local news, traffic, and weather update with Matt Lane. Weekday afternoons, 4:40 until all sports talk on News Radio WGNS.
Happy birthday to Alyssa Anderson, 18, our winner today of that delicious banana pudding at Slick Pig Barbecue. And our good neighbor of the day, who's getting flowers from Jenny Harrison and the family at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts, is Scott Kinney. The person who nominated Scott Kinney said he's always inspiring the youth and sharing his joy for life. He's like a father to many. Scott Kinney, our good neighbor of the day. Well, welcome back. We're talking lawns and gardens. Mitchell Moats with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Here's a weird one for us. I say weird. I hadn't been thinking about this too much. The person says, we haven't been seeing too many fireflies this year. We saw a few at the beginning of springtime and what have you. Did they have their synchronous light show this year up in Cades Cove? Have you been keeping up with the...
I have not. I do know that it was anticipated that they would be there as usual, but I hope
they didn't let us down.
I can't speak to that. I don't know. I'd say the odds, they've done it this long, this many years.
Why not?
I guess I'd bet they would do it again, but I don't know.
Well, now the farmer's market is coming up tomorrow.
It is. Yeah, tomorrow.
Seven till noon,
absolutely.
And of course, it's every Tuesday and Friday.
Tuesday and Friday there at the farmer's market building, the community center building out at Lane Agri Park. And, it's folks, there's probably somebody that's never been there before comes each market day. And very often they'll stop at the office building and say, where's the farmer's market? So
a lot of new people in town.
That's right, new folks moving in. When you come to Lane Agri Park, it's a fairly large piece of property. And so regardless of where you're either going to enter off of John Rice Boulevard or you're going to enter off of Agri Park Drive, one of the two. You want to go to the very drive as far as you can on the property, on the paved areas, okay, through the street, through the parking lot. It's the very last building. It's the third building. It's the large building with the garage doors, okay, down the length of it. That's where the vendors set up, and that's where the market's located. Friday traffic is typically heavy at the market, and probably may even notice traffic heavier than normal tomorrow because early voting is going on, and there's an early voting site out there too. So folks that are
folks
that are looking for a place to vote, you can vote and go to the market or go to the market and vote. But the voting takes place in the livestock arena there.
They're next door to each other.
They're right next door to each other, yeah. And it's pretty easy to figure out where the voting location is because there's about 750 different candidate signs up and down the street right there in front of the building. So it's pretty easy to figure out where that one is.
Now, have you really made it easy and made it a thrill for all of us by you not only have the chance to vote, you have a chance to do the farmer's market? Are you going to have some chick sales or cow sales so we can go out and buy some chickens?
The 4-H chick chain auction will take place in August. And offhand, I can't tell you the date, Bart. I apologize for that. But that's the only animal sale that I think is going
to be
out there.
It would be nice to walk away with a bunch of tomatoes, chicken under each arm, and say, I voted.
You could.
All in one swoop.
That would be the trifecta, I guess, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Our number is 615-893-1450. You must have a fan club. Here's a text saying, tell Mitchell how much we appreciate the grass plots out front, especially this year with the lack of rainfall. It lets us know if there's a type of grass that does better than others, and there seems to be. So,
well, that's, I appreciate the message there. It's always nice to hear.
And you have how many grasses do you have?
Oh, well, shoot, Bart, you have to ask me. That requires doing some math. There, you know, 35, 36 plots, I guess. We have, and we've got some stuff there that, you know, you don't see everywhere. We have a lot of cool season grasses, and so the cool season grasses, that's like your tall fescue, and then also some cool season grass mixes where you have tall fescue, maybe with some Kentucky bluegrass interspersed in with it, or maybe some fine fescues like strong creepy red fescue, hard fescue. Those are kind of for the shady places. Of course, that's all grown out in the full sun. It's not shade there. And do have a plot or two of just pure Kentucky bluegrass. Most of the cool seasons, though, are either a specific variety or cultivar of turf-type tall fescue, or a blend of turf-type tall fescues. But on the warm season side, and of course, the cool season, that's stuff that grows best in the spring and the fall. On the warm season side, we have some zoysia grass. We have centipede grass, and that's not one that you see an awful lot of. It's not typically used, but it's a seeded centipede grass variety. It's been there for a number of years now. We also have St. Augustine grass.
And now, what is that?
So, well, that's
from Florida.
Well, I don't know. It's from Florida. It's grown a lot further south, and you know, I don't know everything. I don't know what all the grasses are that people are growing in their yards. But to my knowledge, and somebody could certainly call in and say, well, no, you're wrong. I've been doing it for years. But to my knowledge, that's the only St. Augustine grass in the county.
Uh-huh.
To my knowledge, okay. So it's Raleigh St. Augustine grass, and that's kind of different. It's a hot weather grass, but one reason that St. Augustine grass may be desirable for some folks is it's a warm season grass that will tolerate some shade much better than Bermuda grass will. But there are different varieties that also have, as I said, zoysia grass, Bermuda grass, centipede grass, St. Augustine grass growing out there, and have a couple of plots of something called Blue Muda. Which is
Blue Muda,
yeah.
Okay.
So that's a concept. It's not a particular, you know, variety or cultivar grass, but it's a concept where you grow two perennial grasses together at the same time, a warm season grass like Bermuda grass, and then a perennial cool season grass like Kentucky bluegrass. So the idea being that you try to maintain, you know, green color year round using both species of grass together, and I mean, you know, it's pretty green right now. So
here's another question. I have hollies that have not been trimmed like they should. They've gotten out of hand to size trees about 10 feet tall. Can I cut them back to 6 feet in height this fall, winter? When should I do that? And would they survive okay?
So, yeah, you could cut them back, but I would not do it now. Simply because they're under stress right now. And doing it now, you know, even if they're not stressed, even in a good growing year, would there be enough time for any new growth that you initiate or that you promote because of heavy pruning? Because you're taking them from 10 feet down to 6 feet. That's a lot. That's you're cutting out a lot of material there. So if you get a big flush of new growth, does it have a chance to harden off really good before we move into the dormant season and it's, you know, more potential, there may be greater potential for cold damage? But what I would suggest is, you know, you waited this long, you might wait just a bit longer. And look at doing that real heavy removal in the late winter, just or very early springtime, just as we get ready to transition out of the dormant season into good growing conditions, because the plant's ready to take off and start growing pretty good. Then probably the second best time to do it is after we get through the spring transition from dormancy into growing. You know, maybe depending on how the spring goes, maybe the latter part of April, early part of May, if things fleshed out good, you know, then prune them hard then, because then they have ample time, typically better growing conditions, a little cooler weather, more adequate moisture than what we're seeing right now.
Another question, this one says, my trees have already turned brown. The leaves are falling out of the trees. Does that mean that my trees are dead now? And will they come back next year?
Well, that, you know, that's a sure enough question right there, isn't it? It is. Are they dead? Well, if they have shed all their leaves, well, that's not a good sign. You know, and we're in the middle of July. You've still got a lot of summer left. Trees that have really shed, if they have shed all their leaves, boy, it sure makes you wonder. So how can you determine if they're dead or not? Well, an indicator is just like when you're looking for living tissue after a hard freeze or something. So you go to some of those small stems, smaller branches. You know, take a sharp knife edge and just scrape the bark. You're looking for green tissue underneath the bark. Pliable, you know, is the stem, are those branches pliable or do they snap? If they're dry and they're snapping, they're dead. If you don't have any green tissue, you know, they're not alive, they are dead. If they're dead, they're not going to come back.
Waiting around hoping that it'll come, that won't do it.
Well, if they're dead, it won't matter.
No.
You know, but I would investigate a little bit just to see if you have signs of life. And if they are, you know, showing signs of life, if you are able to put water on them, then do that. You're probably not going to cause them to, they're not going to re-leaf, okay? But if they're alive, you want to help them to survive if you can. And, you know, a thing about water on trees is, it takes a lot of water for a tree. And you think about trees that have been growing for a while. I've seen folks, they'll say, well, I water the trees. I take a hose and I put it at the base of the tree and turn it on so that it trickles and let it run for, you know, some quantity of time. Well, okay, that's, you're trying something. You're trying something. But you want to water the whole root zone of this tree. So if this tree's been growing for a while, you know, and let's say it's got a spread, you know, 20 feet. From one side, the furthest reaching branch from the right side to the left side, that thing spreads out 20 feet. Well, you got to figure, unless there's something to impede it, then the roots are going to reach out 20 feet or longer. So you're talking, you know, a 20-foot circle around this thing. That's the root zone.
The whole thing.
So water in the base of the tree, well, that's helping some, but you're putting water in just a very small spot. You need to water the whole root zone. So that's where a sprinkler would do better, you know, versus just a water hose at the... Now, for a small tree, just set it out. Yeah, that makes sense because they got a very small root zone right there. They're just, whatever was in that ball when you planted it, that's what's there. So that's what you need to water. But a sprinkler that covers the root zone area, or you know, a series of soaker hose circles out there so that you have, you know, spaced them out and you're watering directly into the soil in a large circumference around that tree, that's a more, you know, efficient way to actually water the root zone. And how much water does it take? Well, there's no pat answer to that, but in reading some literature from some extension publications out of Colorado about managing trees in dry climates, for smaller trees, and we're saying 10 inches or less in diameter, okay, trunk diameter, and you're looking at trunk diameter roughly 4.5 feet above the ground, okay, so roughly chest high on a lot of folks. If the diameter is less than 10 inches or less, then you're talking about, you know, 10 gallons of water per inch of trunk diameter. So, you know, a 10-inch tree, 10 gallons of water per inch, that's 100 gallons, right? You know, a couple of times per month during the dry periods. For larger trees, bigger than 10 inches, then maybe, you know, you're up to 15 gallons per inch or more. So it takes a significant amount of water. So how long does water need to run to supply that? Well, I don't know, because, you know, the pressure at your house may be different than pressure at my house. And so, you know, the size of the diameter of the water hose, that influences what the rate of discharge is. But I mean, you can evaluate it. You know, you can you know, turn the water hose on and catch it in a 5 gallon bucket, and how long does it, you know, how long does it take to run 5 gallons out there? Does it take 30 seconds? Does it take a minute? Whatever the case may be. So you can get some idea of how long, you know, it needs to run to put out some quantity of water. Another way to do it is from overhead sprinkler. You know, how much do these overhead sprinklers put out? Just take some shallow cans, like tuna fish cans, empty cans. Set them around out in the sprinkle zone that this sprinkler covers. Let the water run for a period of time. Then you go back and measure how much water you collected in those cans. And if it's average, if it ran for, you know, an hour and you collected a quarter inch of water, all right, then this thing puts out roughly a quarter inch of water per hour. So you have some idea then of how much water is out there.
All righty. Some good things to know about this. We're going to pause for a moment. We'll be back. We have a lawnmower question for you. Should we or not, maybe? I don't know. Sure.
Maybe call a small engine shop on that one.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Overnight, Good Neighbor Talk turns to UFOs, aliens, the unknown. It's Coast to Coast AM overnight every night on WGNS, Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op. Please come and see us for all your gardening, home, and farm needs. We have a great selection of clothing, farm items, and also our wonderful gift department. Please come see us for all your gift items. And we also have local honey. And if you're interested in being a beekeeper, we do have supplies for that. We have from hives to suits to whatever you need to take care of those bees. We're located at 985 Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there. And so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
A few spotty showers and storms early this afternoon. Otherwise, skies will become mostly sunny, high in the upper 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low near 65. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 74.
The weather on WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Seriously looking at solar power generation? Well, if that's you, Middle Tennessee Electric offers a free consultation with an energy expert. And they have an entire library of educational resources. To learn more, visit mte.com/prosolar.
Middle Tennessee football and basketball games are right here. This is Chip Walters on Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station.
MTSU Sports on WGNS.
Welcome back. Mitchell Motes with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. We're taking lawn and garden questions, getting a lot of them too this morning. 615-893-1450. This person's asking about the ways to mow the lawn. They remember a while back, a few years ago, they said, so they've been listening for a good while, they said, you were talking about the importance of using the push mower, the old reel type push mower. Are you still in favor of that one if you don't have a huge yard?
Oh, I think it makes a lot of sense to use a reel type mower in a case like that. And so, you know, just briefly, what's the difference between a reel mower versus a rotary mower or a powered mower? Well, so a reel mower can be powered or not. And I think they're referring to the human power. They'll push type mower. So some places are referred to as a cylinder mower, but reel mowers is a common term for them. So they have a reel that turns, and they cut grass differently than a rotary mower, which have blades that turn. So the blade on a reel mower is stationary, whereas the blade on a rotary mower is the one that spins. And the difference between the way the two cut is that the rotary mower, since the blade is spinning, then it's hitting the grass as it's spinning around at, you know, some, you know, 3,000 plus revolutions per minute. So it's spinning really fast. And the ends of the blade are what? Sharp. So if you've got a good sharp blade, you know, the chances are you're making a cleaner cut than if the blade is dull. If it's dull, then you're kind of beating the ends of the grass blades off. But there's nothing holding that grass blade up. So it's even with the sharpest blade, it's a little bit less clean cut than you can get with a rotary mower, with a reel mower, because the way a reel mower cuts, the blade is stationary. The cutting bar is stationary, the bed knife. As the reel turns, it pulls that grass blade up against the cutting blade, and it cuts more like scissors. Okay, so it typically makes a cleaner, sharper cut. So just for quality of cut, for the least amount of damage that you do to the grass blade, a reel mower is more often than not going to provide a superior quality of cut. Now, if you've got a great big yard, does it make sense to use a reel mower that's human powered, okay, that you have to push, that covers an 18-inch swath or a 16-inch swath at a time, you know, to cut a 15,000 square foot lawn? Well, I mean, it's yours. Do what you want to, but that's a lot of work. Okay, a lot of work. I've often remarked that for someone that has a small lawn, and especially if you don't have a lot of storage space, an old traditional reel type push mower makes a lot of sense, because number one, it takes up a small amount of space because it's not a great big wide machine. And number two, you don't have to store oil. You don't have to store gasoline, do that kind of maintenance work on it. You don't have to change air filters, et cetera, clean air filters, as you would with a gasoline-powered mower. Regardless of the size of the gasoline-powered mower, it's going to take oil. It's going to take fuel. It's got to take air. And so there has to be maintenance on those things. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense if you have a small lawn. And what is small? Well, you define that. Okay, you define it. Some of these modern reel mowers are easier to use than the old ones from 50, 60 years ago.
What's different about them?
Well, one is some have been designed so that you can adjust the cutting height much easier than you could a lot of the early ones. You didn't have a lot of adjustment, and so you were having to mow, you know, very close. And for some, like tall fescue, for example, you don't want to mow short. You want to mow pretty tall. So you like to stay up to some, you know, this time of year, the taller the better. But, you know, 4 inches or so. Well, so there's some mowers now that the height adjustment, the height of cut adjustment is just like it is on a rotary mower. You just got a lever, you know, and you can use that to adjust. You got some gauge wheels, some caster wheels out there that raise the height of cut. So that that's a good addition. Okay, that's a good improvement, nice feature. They're made to take into account the value of inertia. Once you get something rolling, it keeps rolling. So they'll use a heavier reel. Then once you get it started, it's easier to push. So that's kind of an advantage, I guess.
Here's this is a really strange one. This one says, I've noticed that my lawn mowing crew comes every week now, whether I think my yard needs mowing or not. I think they're just trying to make some extra money because the yard is not growing right now. Could that hurt my grass?
Yes.
To quit? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if grass doesn't need mowing, and especially if it's drought-stressed, driving a machine across drought-stressed grass can damage, further damage that drought-stressed grass. I mean, it's not uncommon to see, tracts of dried grass where vehicles have trafficked across turf areas when it was under drought stress. Now, you know, are they trying to earn extra money? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, if it's a contract for so many, if you have a contract and it says, okay, we're going to cut this yard so many times per year for some amount of money, okay, well, regardless if they're cutting it every week or not, you paid them for so many cuts. Maybe that's their approach. Maybe that's their look at it. I don't know that. But the answer to that question is, could it damage the turf? Yes, it could. It could. So you just, if it doesn't need mowing, don't mow it. And if it doesn't stand up to traffic nearly as well when it's drought stressed either. So just staying off of it is a plus.
Another question. This person says, I'm confused because last year, it seems like some of the classes that you offered in Master Gardening and also the other classes changed. As we approach fall, is it sign-up time? And if it is sign-up time, go over those rules again. Is it master gardeners first or what?
Master gardeners typically begin registration in November.
November.
It's okay. Because it's a winter class, you know, winter through spring. So you're talking January, typically through April. So registration for master gardener training typically opens up sometime in November. And it'll go November, December. And the goal is to have the class set so they can start whatever the target date is there in January. But that's typically how that runs. Now, the Garden Basics course, which is a shorter class, it's not nearly as in-depth as the Master Gardener training. I think it's five weeks, whereas Master Gardener is more like 14 weeks. It will be a fall series. And so they'll, and this is conducted by the Rutherford County Master Gardeners. They carry out the Garden Basics course, and it will, I think it's a September, October. Offhand, I do not remember what the dates are for the class. I think they're putting it together right now, as a matter of fact, because I had an email from Master Gardener asking if I was available to teach a session during that, and I just saw that the email had come, and I haven't opened it up and read it yet. It just arrived yesterday. And so that's going to be like a September, October time frame. So, you know, that being the case, as soon as you get the course set, then they'll open up, you know, registration for that. So I'm assuming that's what they're referring to there.
So that's probably
I mean, at one time, the Garden Basics class was a springtime class. It was offered during the spring, but they've transitioned away from that. So the Master Gardener training is that winter springtime, and the Garden Basics is a fall session. Now, in August, it's four consecutive nights. I think it's Thursday nights beginning in August and through the first Thursday night in September. So that would put us, I think August 15th is the start date, but I apologize. I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't remember the date. But we have the Grassmasters Lawn Care Academy that's starting. That's a free session, but it's on four consecutive Thursday nights beginning somewhere around the middle of August. It runs through the first Thursday night in September. I think it's September 5th, possibly. But anyway, you can contact the Extension Office. Check out our newsletter. If you don't subscribe to our newsletter, it comes out once a month. It'll have information about registration for all the different classes and courses that are being offered by the Extension Service.
Mitchell Mote, our guest today from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. Mitchell, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Bart. My pleasure.